Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Today, what I thought I would do is kind of a special combination episode. Sometimes when I want to spice things up, I will, do a normal episode while at the same time being on TikTok Live. But there are a few things that I would like to talk about today that I think I'm going to cover before I ever go live. I think this might be also the best way of handling, doing a TikTok live going forward. Unless I just don't have like anything planned and just want to do a live episode just for the sake of doing a live episode. But there are some things I would like to talk about. And I do think that when I'm on a live episode just from the start, it's very difficult for me to stay on topic. Surprise, surprise. It's happened many, many times. So I thought maybe this time I will cover the topics that I'd like to cover and then go on live just for fun, right? Just to see, just to test the waters, you know, just see what's going on out there. So let's just jump right in. First things first, if you have not First things first. In the show notes of this episode is the link to the 2025 Prince of Germany stand-up comedy tour. Go click that link in the show notes and get your tickets now. We are, let me check, I think I might have talked about it already in the last episode with Ben. Let me just check here. If there's any people now who are just listening who might not have seen any of the posts, let me just pull this up. So, now officially, we have announced the Prince of Germany Tour 2025. We have starting on the 12th of October. All the shows are in October. On the 12th, we have Frankfurt, Germany at the Jahrhunderthalle Club. And by the way, every single show in Germany is a seated theater. We upgraded from the last tour. We not only have more cities, but we have seated theaters, and we are in three countries. Side note, though, I must say, for those who might come to the Zurich show at the end of the tour, Zurich and, in the middle of the tour, Vienna and Innsbruck, the Austrians, these three shows are the only shows that are not seated, unfortunately. I'm learning more and more as I, you know, continue this path as a, you know, stand-up storyteller, comedian guy, that there's like certain rules to booking venues. And there's a chance I might have learned this rule as well, you know, if music had taken the same path that comedy is now taking. But there is definitely an interesting, like with any industry, there are things that you would just never think of that when you get to a position where now that, now that train is running, there are things that come into play, rules, changes, stop signs, bylaws, things that you just would never, you know, think of that play a pretty big role in where you can book and how to book it and when you can book it and why some things have to be different from other things. Like I've said many times on this podcast, this will always be where the truest of true information will come, because this is the smallest outlet that I have for my audience. And I kind of like that. You know, I really wouldn't be hurt if the listener, you know, base or like the amount of people that listen to this, if it just never changed. If the audience for the comedy shows and the audience on my, you know, social media continued to grow, that would be ideal. But if the podcast just stayed the same, I really would have no problem with that. I've never made money with this podcast anyway. This has always just been like my little, you know, private diary slash love letter to those who genuinely enjoy just, you know, listening to me, which is just incredible. I can't imagine that. I can't believe that there's more than like two people that can stand me for this long. So if this amount of listeners just never changes, nothing would change how happy I am with this. And I bring that up to say that for this tour, there are a couple of little secrety secrets that I cannot publicly post about or announce. Now, when we announced these dates, and I will get to the full list in just a minute, but there are, I should say, like, my main social media audience is based in Berlin. I think I've said that many times, you know, based off the analytics. You know, that's just, you know, it's perhaps one of the largest, you know, most significant cities in the entire country. And it hosts, you know, maybe the most maybe the largest congregation of non-Germans living in Germany. It's just a very English-friendly city. It's the capital. You know, it's a huge, enormous city. And it has many, many, many people living there from every country. It's a beautiful melting pot of people. And, you know, it's very easy to get around there in very different languages, in Turkish and in English, you know. And in German, of course. And that's where my main audience resides, at least for my social media, for my videos, you know? It makes total sense. I love my Berlin audience. Whenever I visit Berlin, it makes me feel like I'm, you know, on a much smaller scale, visiting Berlin makes me feel like I'm a, you know, superstar. You know, like I'm Brad Pitt walking around over there. It's not that crazy, of course. But when I go to Berlin, you know, it's just so nice to just like walk down the street, you know, to get a coffee or to go to the hotel or to visit a friend. And, you know, I get stopped a lot. And it's, I'm so happy for that. And whenever people stop to tell me that, you know, even if they don't really know what to say, if they just, are you that guy? You know, it just makes me happy to know that, you know, something's working, you know. No one's ever stopped to tell me that they think what I'm doing sucks. I think there's been some people that have stopped me based purely on knowing my face, but they didn't have something very nice to say. And that's okay. That's okay. I don't know that I would have done that in that situation, but no one's ever said anything mean. But for the most part, you know, Berlin is the city where if I'm just walking around for whatever reason, sometimes even in the train station when I just get off the platform, I get stopped. And that's just beautiful and so, so exciting and like fulfills all these, you know, these little dreams of being recognized for your talent that I've had since I was, yeah, a kid, you know? So I should say, I bring all that up to say that this tour list, for the moment, does not mention Berlin. Now, does that mean that Berlin will not be on this tour at all? No. You know, that's what I love about this podcast, right? So, it's, you know, so, okay, so, all right, so, it's gonna be there. But I cannot say when and where just yet. If you go and you look at the tour dates and you see the window of time in which I am performing, which is all of October, starting on the 12th, it's gonna be somewhere in there. Okay? But I can't talk about it. And the reason that I cannot talk or post about it or put it on the initial tour list is because in July, I'm performing at Lollapalooza in Berlin. Lollapalooza, if you don't know it, type it in your Google because it's a very famous festival. You know, it's a festival that I've known that name like Coachella, you know, or South by Southwest. I've known the name Lollapalooza or Bonnaroo, you know, since I was young. And I have the great honor of performing comedy at this amazing festival in Berlin. Now, the show I'm going to do at Lollapalooza will not necessarily be my full new hour for the tour in October. Of course not. Of course not. You know, I did my tour last October, November, the one that's on my YouTube. You know, you can check it out in the show notes if you haven't watched it. That tour was its own special beast. And I did a full hour-long show like 8 months before that in the Miller Club. It was like my first real full like hour-long special. And that dealt a lot with more personal stories, like my journey to Germany, which will be featured in the book I'm doing. And my theory was for Lollapalooza that I think it makes sense to, of course, not do my entire new show. You know, if anybody comes to Lollapalooza and then afterwards when I can announce the Berlin dates, if they think like, well, I've seen it already, you know, I need to make it very strikingly clear that it is a different show. In Lollapalooza, I will, of course, be testing some new material, of course. But it'll be a bit of like a, you know, a little jambalaya. Like, oh, this is going to be a little bit of that very first show, which a lot of people never saw, right? You know, my very first hour special is not online. I did it at the Miller Club for like 210 people. And then I did it a few months later at the America House in Munich for, I don't know, another 200 people or something. So not that many people have seen it. And the tour from last year has a couple of really strong stories that I do want to expand upon and try and see if I can kind of make them fresh, because I think there's a lot of people who, you know, also didn't hear. I mean, I did like three cities on the last tour, and there's a couple of very good, strong stories on that last tour. So if you do three cities, you know, you're looking at like 400 person, 500 person venues. It's also not the entire city, of course, you know. So I'm thinking for Lollapalooza, it's a little bit of that very first show, which very few people saw, a little bit of the last tour, which of course is online. You know, I'm not going to take a lot from it, because if you've seen it, you've seen it. It's very different from like listening to an album, you know. There's a great Jim Gaffigan joke about that. And then of course I'm going to test out some new material. So for those who might go to Lollapalooza, you're getting like a very special set that no one's ever seen. A combination of these three hour-long specials. That's going to be, you know, like the best of the best that I can try and put together. Then you have the October tour, the main tour, starting in October of this year. And this is going to be a completely new hour 10, hour 15. I'm not quite sure yet, brand new material, which will be promoting my book. I have a book, you know. You know, the thing is, I feel like sometimes I'm talking to you guys as if I'm talking on social media to the bigger audience that doesn't know everything. You guys know everything. I feel like that's why I love this podcast, because I am just talking to like the homies, you know? So let me just break this part down. So yes, Lollapalooza is a combo I can't talk about or announce the Berlin show until after that's done. So in the summer, right? So these are the dates that are public. 12th of October, Frankfurt at the Jahrhunderthalle Club. 13th, very next night, in Cologne, the Theater am Tanzbrunnen. One day off for travel. 15th of October, Hamburg. I'm back in Hamburg at Fabrik. Then we depart to Austria, a foreign country. The 21st. So there's a pretty big gap there between the 15th and the 21st. Maybe pay attention to that. We're going to go to Vienna. Vienna, Austria. Which, sadly, like I said at the start, Austria shows and Germany shows. Oh, sorry. Austria shows and Switzerland shows are the only locations that are not seated venues. And this is also why there are some cities that we have not approached. Now, I talked about Berlin, but Salzburg and Leipzig, you know, it's not easy to go to every city you want to go to. Most important reason being, when you want to just pick a city because you get a lot of people sending you messages saying you should go to that city, you have to look at venues that compare in size to the venues that you're playing. It's not like cheap. It's not free to go to a venue in a new city. And you have to try and plan out, like, well, how many tickets could we realistically sell, right? And some venues are far more expensive than others to rent. That's something that a lot of people don't know and don't get. You have to loan the venue out. You are renting the space and the employees of that space for the event. Last tour was great because by the time that I started the tour, every location was sold out like 5 months in advance. So that when I arrived at the place, everyone was in the best mood, and then, you know, we could talk about everything we wanted to do. But if you go to a new city you've never been to, which is exactly the case for a lot of the cities here, I've never performed in Frankfurt or Cologne or Vienna or Innsbruck or Zurich, right? Well, I've performed in Switzerland, and I've done some small acoustic like guitar shows in one show in Vienna. But like this is a different beast. The reason I'm not going to like Salzburg or Leipzig is for different reasons. In Salzburg, like there's just not like a venue that would make sense to go to that's worth the cost of renting it. This is going to sound very technical. This is very inside baseball. But if a venue is not a suitably sized theater, which on this tour run is the kind of space that we are looking for, like, for example, Hamburg and Cologne, Munich, Frankfurt, these venues are the perfect size and they already are theaters that have built-in seats. So you are just renting the space and the employees and the ticket sales, pay off the rental of that space, and after the costs and the agency fees, you're getting your cut at the end. But it is like, it is, you know, it is expensive to lock these places down. But some places, like, for example, Leipzig, right? It doesn't have seated, like already seated locations of the size that we're looking for. I can't do an arena. I'm nowhere near that. And I don't want to do like a standing only, you know, 100 person location there, because it wouldn't pay off the cost of going there for the ticket price that I would like to sell. You know, I'm not going to ask people to pay like, you know, $80 or some crazy shit. So then you might think, well, if you have a standing only room, why don't you just put out chairs? Well, this is something we learned last time. The last tour was all standing, which I hated that for my fans. I was so grateful that we sold it out, but Hamburg was tough for the standing audience. It was very clear that they were not enjoying being on their feet, and who would, right? Who would? And I talked to my booking agent about this, and I was like, why can't we just put down chairs? And she said, well, if they stand up for one show, it's 500 people. If we put out chairs, then not only does that add cost to the rental of that location, but it goes down from 500 people to like 180 or like 190. So you have to rent the venue a second time. And it's really not about like, oh, if we make them stand, we'll get, you know, like, oh, like thousands of bucks. It's like, this is the most, you know, financially responsible way to like come to your city for that first round. And that's why I'm so happy that this round is seated. But exactly, we can't go to Leipzig because the locations there just don't make sense for this size. Like where I'm at on the ladder of whatever comedy, it does not make sense to go there and rent out a place. And then because of the size of the place, charge like, you know, whatever it is, 45 euro tickets. That's insane. I would never ask people to do that. That's ridiculous. You know, if I was doing like an arena, like I'm going to go see, a Canadian comic in Berlin in May, and the ticket, I'm looking at it right now, $54.85. You know, let's say like $55, and he's playing like a 1,500 or 1,400 person beautiful theater. That's totally fine with me. 55 euros to go see, you know, a big comic who's touring multiple countries. He's from Canada, you know, and these are like big locations with beautiful seating. You know, I'm still like on the lower rungs of the ladder where I can't and would not want to go to a place where to be there means I have to charge my followers more. I'm just not going to do that. It's stupid and mean and selfish. I'm not going to do that. So that's why Salzburg, Leipzig, that's why we're not going there, even though I keep getting messages about it. Berlin, just wait a little bit, guys. Just wait a little bit. Come on, it's coming. Anyway, 12th of October, Frankfurt. 13th of October, Cologne. 15th of October is Hamburg. 21st of October is Vienna at the Fluck, F-L-U-C-C. 23rd in Austria, is Innsbruck at the Maria Theresia venue. And then a very special return back to home base here in Munich, the 25th. I'm doing my very first double show. The 25th of October is in Munich at this beautiful location where, I don't know if you guys saw any clips or photos I might have posted. There wasn't a lot of media to post from it, which was weird, actually, now that I think about it. But I did like another TEDx, like a TED Talk thing where I did like 10 minutes of comedy at this place in English called the Work 7, in German, the Werk 7. I'm doing my very first double show, an early show and a late show, on the 25th of October. I'm going to film both. This is a really common strategy in stand-up comedy to do, you know, they might not always do two shows the same day, but sometimes they do. And then they might even do like a third show the next night, sometimes even a fourth show. Oftentimes it's just two. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a camera crew a little bigger than the last special, which again is in the show notes if you want to watch it for free on YouTube. And I'm going to, it's a seated, beautiful venue, 600 seater. So we're going to, you know, two shows. So it's 1,200 people if we sell it out. I'm going to do the same show in the same day, twice, same clothes, and then film everything. And if you've ever watched a comedy special ever in your life, they filmed two or three and then cut together the best responses from every, or the best flow, the best delivery of each individual joke. And then it feels like you're watching just one performance. I don't know if I'm just like rocking someone's world right now, but that is exactly how it's basically always been. Like even back to like Richard Pryor and Carlin, like they always filmed two or three of the same show in the same clothes. And like modern comics, of course, do it, like, you know, Nate Bargatze and Mark Normand, you know, all these guys. It's just the business. You film two or three, usually just two, unless something went wrong, and you film them the same way, and then you cut together. Sometimes you cut like, oh, well, the first, you know, 25 minutes of show two was amazing. So that's just the first 25 minutes of show two. And then there's like a joke or two that's from show one that's better. Oops, sorry, hit the mic. And that's spliced in. So what I'm going to do is exactly what, you know, what the pros do, because that's what I want to do. I want to try and, you know, keep it as professional as possible. I will be completely naked. You know, I don't know if that's professional or not. You know, my thing is I have like a 15-minute like fart trumpet presentation I want to do. You know, are they going to shut things down? Maybe, but I'm a little bit of a rebel. Okay. Munich, 25th of October, Werk 7, Work 7, early show, late show. And then we're going to wrap things up 2 days later at the on the 27th of October in Zurich, Switzerland, which is so crazy, at the Papiersaal. On paper right now, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cities, 8 shows. You know, if the tickets sell, you know, clearly we know there's going to be one more city, but there's actually something I can't talk about too much. But if a certain city sells out, we are actually going to go to another city that's not listed. So there's a potential for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cities, 10 shows. There's a potential for that. So, but I can only really, I shouldn't have mentioned anything about the other city, but I definitely can't talk about the other one. But it's all good. It's cool. It's the Prince of Germany tour. And I do want to give a little shout out to the artwork. So the photographs of my face are from Tavis Beck. He also photographed the cover of my book that's going to come out in September. So shout out Tavis Beck. Tavis Beck. TavisBeck.photo. on Instagram. Great photographer, really wonderful guy. And then the graphic designer who made this artwork, like took my picture and, you know, designed the fonts and the colors. And if you guys have seen my Instagram, it's like this great poster of like, you know, I'm not going to do math. I'm exhausted. It's like some really nice poster of every city all together, which is like all these different photos of my face, like different facial expressions I'm making, that were shot by Tavis, but he puts them into this nice collage with different colors and different, like, you know, overlaying designs. Like the main poster photo is my face in blue, but with this nice neon pink crown on top. And it's cool. It's really cool. It's beautiful. And that, his name is Leo Estevez. He also made the stickers, the Ich Liebe Sommer stickers. He made the hot sauce design, which if you want to get a hot sauce, hey, no better time to do it. The Jordan Prince hot sauce is also linked in the show notes. And that's Leo Estevez, a wonderful Spanish man living here in Munich. And his Instagram is Les83 machines, like spelled like English machines. Les83 machines and TavisBeck.photo. So shout out to those guys. They have been such amazing team players, man. And I'm excited for this tour to, you know, maybe even travel with someone who's going to do photography with me, like make social media crap, you know, like that's awesome. And then do professional photos for the big shows and have like Tim Henkel, who filmed the special that's in the show notes, like from the last tour, for the, you know, have him for the next one. So very, very cool. Very, very exciting. And I really, you know, I'm just so, I don't know. I'm just so happy to have that. So, I think that's every really important thing that I wanted to touch on. Also, before we go live on TikTok, cause we're already over half an hour now. The Jordan Prince sports socks are finished. The website is finished. And, sorry. The website's finished. And the product is stocked. It's, you know, it's all with my agency in Berlin. They have the packaging ready to go. They have, you know, all of my handwritten, you know, self-signed cards and stickers and everything. I wanted every package to have like something personal, a little thank you. And I hand wrote, you know, every single one. And right now we're focusing on the sales of the tour. So go get your tickets now. And then pretty soon we are going to drop the merch link for the socks. And, you know, it could be a beautiful thing to have people show up to the tour, you know, wearing the socks together and all being kind of like a sport sock team with the new book and everything. And, oh, I forgot about this. I wanted to mention, if you haven't heard last week's episode with Ben Hoff, with Benjamin Hoffmeister, go check it out. He's a really sweet guy. He's very friendly. He's very talented. And we are currently making a brand new song together. My first new song since 2021. And I love it. I'm so proud of it. He's so easy to work with. He's so much fun. And yeah, tour, book, socks, Ben's song. Shout out Moritz Bender for having, I don't even know, is it 10 or 11, 12 nominations for the German Film Prize for September 5? Unbelievable. What an achievement. Very well deserved. And yeah, again, shout out Les83 Machines and TavisBeck.photo. I'm going to take a small break here. As you can hear, I should drink some water. Gonna drink some water, and then we're gonna come back on TikTok Live. All right, guys, so I am back from my break, and currently I have just started the TikTok Live. I'm gonna just, you know, feel it out for a little bit. I realized something that I never do, and maybe it's something that I should do because it's, you know, containing my biggest audience. I never really do Instagram Live. I never really thought about doing that, you know, in connection to this, but maybe I should. So I'll see how things go on here. If things are fun and if, you know, people join and have a good time and we have a good chat, then, you know, it's all good. But, you know, we can just feel things out and maybe switch it over to there. Let's just see. Let's just see. So I'm just going to wait for some people to join here. And just wanted to say hi to everyone who's coming into the chat. I just wanted to, you know, open up a conversation about the fact that I've just launched my new 2025 stand-up comedy tour for October. And if anyone, you know, wants to talk about that or about anything else, you know, I'm here. We can just have a good time and, you know, just see where things go. Yeah, so, you know, thinking about the tour in the fall. Oh, one thing I did want to get across that I did forget earlier when I was talking is my friend Lauren is from Louisiana. And she now lives in Australia. And I told her on a recent call, thank you. This is going to sound so weird to those just listening, but thank you, Big D, for being a number one gifter. Thank you so much for that. But my friend Lauren is from Louisiana, and she recently moved to Australia. She has a good life there. She's all happy. Everything's wonderful. But she, I think I might have shook her world up a little bit when I told her that my biggest fear, I think, on the planet is spiders. You know, nothing crazy, nothing you've never heard of before. I think my friend Moritz and I have that in common, but you know, in my old childhood home in Mississippi, there was once a black widow spider, and I saw it, and my friend Cody was there, and he killed it from me. Mike says, you're not the only American goofball in Germany. I didn't say I was the only one. I never said I was the only one. I just hope I'm the one that makes you laugh. So in my hometown, yeah, I saw Black Widow. And in the States, there are just so many horrifying spiders, right? And because I follow things, thank you, Mike. And Tara, hi from Boston. Hi from Munich. Thanks for joining. My friend Lauren, when she goes to Australia, I think everyone also who's joining this live can relate to it, that there is so much content about how horrifying and scary the animals are, the insects, you know, the crocodiles, the giant spiders, the scorpions, the kangaroos, you know, it's a very wild place. And I told her on this FaceTime recently that I think it's probably a very beautiful place, and I part of me does really want to visit Australia, especially, like, you know, Melbourne and Sydney. You know, it's just, you know, just a cool, it's just cool. Like, of course I would want to see someplace new that I've never seen before. And I told her that, one, I've seen a lot of videos about these giant huntsman spiders, and that really freaks me out. And the other one was, I told her, if I saw a funnel web spider, I would burn down the building in which I've seen it, and I would leave the continent. Now, thankfully, Germany does not have scary, poisonous spiders. You know, small anecdote, small little side story. The day that I was moving to Germany, I stayed at my brother's house in Nashville, Tennessee. I took a nap in his guest bed, and I woke up with a swelling on my right side, and it had two little fang bites. And I had very clearly been bitten by some kind of spider, some sort of local spider. And it started to swell and swell. And I started taking Benadryl, which is like an anti-allergy, you know, medication, because I thought, you know, all of us thought, oh, he must be having like an allergic reaction to this. It was the wrong decision to make, because Benadryl, turns out, is the number one medicine that makes me pass out. I was taking Benadryl for a spider bite and blacking out like a, you know, freshly 21-year-old, you know, college student during Mardi Gras. I was blacking out. It was terrifying. I was literally like against my wish. Like I would wake up on his sofa in the living room, and it was so itchy, and it was growing to the size of like an orange. And I remember feeling it, being like, this is, and it was like thick. It was like, it's not skin anymore. It was like rubber. And it was so red. And I was like, oh, man, this is definitely a spider bite. And then the Benadryl was just raging through my body. And I was like, yeah, it's really a, you know, I was out of commission. I was out of control. It was terrifying. And at some point, my brother had to wake me up and say, hey, man, we have to go to the airport now. And it was a really terrible journey, because I was blacking out on the journey to the airport. I made my first flight, but the next flight, the first flight landed so late that I missed the second one. And I was just lounging in these uncomfortable metal chairs. I think it was in Philadelphia. I think it was some East Coast, like Northern East Coast airport. And I was there for like 12 hours, man. And by the time I got to Munich, finally, the patch on my chubby love handle was the size of a small pumpkin. And all I had to do once I landed was go to the pharmacy and get cortisol. And this little cream made it all go away in like just a few hours, you know? But I suffered. I really suffered. And my friend who moved to Australia, I told her that I have big fear of spiders. And I told her that what I've seen from like online videos, like my biggest fear is funnel web spiders. And literally today, she sent me a picture of her bathroom window where you're naked and stuff. And outside that window was a funnel web spider. Burn it down. Burn it down. Burn it. C'est la vie. Time in Australia. Ciao. Bye-bye. Funnel web now owns the house. You know. Sorry if you're in a relationship. It's over now. Okay. That's my nightmare. Yeah. Black widow as a kid, bitten by something in like 2015, and then my friend living in Australia. Horrible. Horrible. Matt says, fly to Germany just to go to the Apotheke. That's literally how it was, man. I literally went, I landed at the Munich airport in this crazy, drowsy stupor, you know, and went up to my German gal and was like, I'm not okay. I think I'm dying. And then she saw this huge lump on my love handle. And she was like, we need to go to the pharmacy now. You know, like we need to go to somebody now. Thankfully, it's all it needed was cortisol. Tara, I just looked it up. Did you look up the funnel web spiders? Because those are horrifying. Jermaine, I have fallen in love with my German friend who's in Cologne. Oh, well, that is an interesting change of topic. I'm interested. Does your friend know that you're in love? Yeah, Tara, right? The funnel web? It's one of those, I just know like a few spiders by name. And she sent me the photo. It's outside her bath. It's on the other side of her bathroom window. I mean, when you shower, it's like your most vulnerable position physically. I'm not down for that. I'm not down for that. Ryan, I'm American and I live in Germany. I'm doubled over in laughter after every video. You're the best. Thanks, Ryan. That's so nice to hear. That's very sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Tara, it looks like it has an agenda. The funnel web spiders do, right? I was in a hotel and there was like a big room that was just for kids. It was like, you know, slides and these like mats and like giant sized Legos. And on the table by the door was this like creepy, it was like a book you would find in a children's library, you know, of like, oh, crazy animals from all around the world. And I opened it up and it was the most like, even for me now in my 30s, it was the most horrifying, like, images of the scariest snakes and spiders. And as, you know, as like a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old, oh my God, I would have thought that's the coolest book ever. And part of me is still, you know, it's like when you're standing at a cliff, right? And you look down. And it's so far down that you know if you slipped, you'd fall so far and you would die. Bear with me. Part of me feels that way when I look at books of horrifying animals. When I look at these books, it's not that I want to have anything to do with them. I respect them. And I admire them. They're beautiful. They're crazy creatures. How did they get this way, right? But part of me looks at like a cobra or a cottonmouth snake or an anaconda or like a Burmese python. Or you get to these tarantulas or, you know, these funnel web spiders, black widow spiders. And they're so scary and so horrifying. And it's like I kind of admire it. I'm kind of drawn to it. It's like part of me, I don't know, it's like being in admiration of your greatest fear. If that makes sense. Like, do I ever want to see any of those things in my home? Never. No. I would cry and poop my pants and vomit. But if I see one in a photo, I go, oh, look at that. That is the master. That is the, wow, you know, whoa, that's wow. You know, it's really, oh, man. Tara, the Struwwelpeter of spiders. Yeah. The Struwwelpeter of spiders. Exactly, exactly. Sarah, you appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate nature so much. It's like this classic, you know, legendary Werner Herzog documentary. I think it was his most successful one ever, Grizzly Man. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Grizzly Man, but Grizzly Man, oh my God, there's something let me think of the best way to phrase what I want to say. There's something about, what's his name? The poor guy. Timothy Treadwell. There's something about the way that Werner Herzog films the story of Timothy Treadwell, where it connects to this idea of how I feel about spiders. It's not something I would ever do. It's not something I would even remotely do, but I can't take my eyes away from it. Like, for those who don't know, Grizzly Man is maybe arguably one of the best documentaries ever made. It's from 2005 from, Americans would say Werner Herzog, but Werner Herzog. He made so many great movies and documentaries. But it's a documentary about Timothy Treadwell. It's a guy who lived in the Alaskan wilderness with wild grizzly bears for a long time until he was eventually murdered and devoured by these bears. And it's just like, it's exactly the same thing with the spiders. Like, I can't take my eyes away. I just can't. It's so fascinating. I don't know. I could get really obsessed with this. I love Werner Herzog. thank you, Taco Ninja, for the gifts. Thank you. Cologne Comedy Festival wants to speak to you. Look out for the email. Okay, Yvonne. You know, my agency's email is in my bio. So sure, sounds great. Hello, Chwaden. Hello, Sidra. German sleep paralysis demon part two. Hey, Taylor, what's up? I love that sleep paralysis gimmick. Like, for those who have never seen this, it's like a trend. You know, I think, like, there's so many trends, on especially on TikTok and, you know, later, months later on Instagram. It's very hard sometimes to pick out a trend where you think this trend might do well in my niche. How do I make it unique to me? And the sleep paralysis demon was one of the first videos in a long time where I saw that trend. I saw a few videos that did it, and they were all kind of different how they approached it. And I thought, oh, that would be such a perfect, you know, little angle to approach my audience, you know. And like, the people who I'm talking to now are not even close to the same people who listen to this goofy podcast. But those who are listening to this later in a few days, there's like this trending sort of style of video where like, people who suffer from sleep paralysis tend to hallucinate a sleep paralysis demon. Like, they very commonly hallucinate like a shadow figure that stands above them while they can't move. And it's just a result of half of their brain being conscious and the part of the brain that controls the body not being awake yet. And it's horrible. I would hate to suffer from that. But there's a trend of people representing the different kinds of sleep paralysis monsters you could be. And the one that I did was very, very German. And I was really happy with that idea. I had a lot of fun doing that. Ferg says, du spinst, you're crazy. You know, du spinst, doch du spinst. You'd be looking forward to Frühlingsfest again. Yeah, there's a lot of great events coming up in Germany that, or especially where I am here in Munich, that I have to take better advantage of how many like cool events or holidays there are that I, you know, don't film enough in, that I don't go to. Yeah, exactly, Taylor, like Stockbierfest. I've never thanks for the gift. That's so nice. I don't do enough outdoor like social events. Like for those, also for the handful of people here, you should follow Taylor because she's a great content creator. And we've talked, Taylor and I, about my friend Mario. And Mario is a very successful content creator that I've done a lot of stuff with. And he is so brave. He's so brave about, you know, just because I had the luxury of going out with him in public and shooting content. And he's so unashamed and so completely secure when it comes to being in a very crowded place and not caring at all about shooting something on a crowded sidewalk at the busiest possible time because he has an idea. And he's German, and he's the first German I've ever seen in my life that when our activity was interrupted, he would respond to Germans in English. And that was really interesting for me. You know, we went to like a just a regular bank for him to get some cash out for Oktoberfest last year. And there was like this older German guy, someone in his 60s, who was just asking for help on how to, you know, how this particular, you know, ATM functions. And Mario, who is a German, only answered these questions in English. And, you know, he's lived in the States for a long time, and his wife is American, and I'm very sure that all plays a role. But there's also this part of me, as an American in Germany, who finds that still very weird, and I haven't asked him about that yet. I think I brought it up in the moment, and he was like, oh, did I really? He didn't really realize that he did it. But, like, if I got to the point where I was like top to bottom, like perfectly fluent, like, for example, Taylor Hollingsworth. If I was fluent, no issue, top to bottom, no problem, and I interacted with an American, and it was instantly recognizable as an American in this foreign place with me, there's no chance that I would approach them in German. Like, what? That's crazy. But besides that, I really, like, that's something I just don't understand about how his instinct was to speak English. But if you've lived in somewhere else for so long, maybe that's just how it is. But he has such a courage about, there's this absence of caring how you're perceived at all. Now, is he a 6'5" tall, gorgeous, you know, ripped ab supermodel? Literally a model? Sure. Does that participate? Maybe it's because he's like a 6'5" tall, gorgeous model. But when we were shooting something on a sidewalk and it was so busy, and part of me kept thinking, oh, let's just wait until this next, you know, group passes and then we can shoot it. And he just started talking to camera, full volume, you know, camera tripod. And there's no, I mean, it's like Kyle Gordon, for those who don't know Kyle Gordon, who's so popular now. I guess that's kind of just how you have to do it. And it's really admirable. It's scary when you're just not that type of person, you know? So there's a lot of things I can learn from him. Susan, how does that work? How would the 60-year-old man respond? You know, it was really a weird situation to be in because I'm not a fluent German speaker. I know enough. But I'm watching an older gentleman who's trying to ask about this. Like, people who live in Germany will know that next to the ATMs inside of a bank, there's this other machine that you can check your bank account with. And it's kind of old school. And I think he was just trying to understand the formalities of this particular machine. But Mario was answering him in English, but he was still showing him like which buttons. So I think they got there. But part of me also felt like a little strange, like, why don't, this guy's so old, why don't you answer, you know, you know this guy speaks mostly German. It was so strange. But I think in the end, he did help him. He wasn't like a, you know, Mario's a very kind, supportive, sweet guy. It wasn't like he just left this old man, you know, to suffer or something. He did help him. But I think just living abroad just changes that. You know, maybe it's, yeah, exactly. Taylor, going to Stockbeerfest. Maybe it's something about when you live abroad long enough, speaking purely that other place's language. I think it is just that simple. Mario is just that, he's just fluent in his, you know, we had just done like a long podcast together in English, and the content that we filmed was in English, and maybe he was just thinking in English. I don't know. Susan says, it's okay. You can say it in English. I understand English. He was in US 10 years. Wait. When we moved back to Germany, my German husband ordered ice cream in German. And the woman said to him, it's okay, you can say it in English. I didn't realize that was a two-parter. When we moved back to Germany, my German husband ordered ice cream in German. And the woman said to him, it's okay, you can say it in English. I understand English. Because he had been in the U.S. for 10 years. Wow. Wow, that's crazy that it can shift that much. That's kind of shocking. He's German born. And he speaks his natural, like, mother's tongue. And the woman responds in English. That's wild. That, like, I don't know. That's actually kind of shocking to me. Susan says, he isn't Schwäbisch enough. They think he has a British accent. Yeah, when it comes to certain dialects, that actually checks out. Taylor, your accent can definitely change after 10 years. Tell me about it. Yeah. Facts, for sure. I think I kind of assumed it was more when native English speakers shift, you know, over time into a foreign language. But I guess it does make sense if you're speaking like German or Dutch or French and you live in the States long enough or in the UK. I guess it could shift enough. Sarah, I hope to live in Germany long enough that Americans can't recognize me. I can totally relate to that. It's funny. I have a funny relationship to that thought. I really do, because I struggle with my fluency or my attempt at fluency in German. All my friends, you know, right now are somewhere rolling their eyes going like, fluency? What? I'm not fluent by far. And that's the struggle that I deal with. But when I have American friends visiting, that is when I feel like I sound like I was born here. I'm pulling out all the stops, you know? Yeah, my mom will visit and I'll be like, "Entschuldigung, Sie bitte, if you hadn't counted it." You know, like, I'll really like try as and I'll act like it's no big deal. Even though I might be, before we get out of the car, like double checking, like, Dan, yeah, no problem. I'll order for us, you know. At the end of the day, the waiter or, you know, whatever, it doesn't really matter at all. But it's funny when I feel like I need to represent to people that come from where I come from. I feel like I need to represent to them that I got a hold on this, man. I got it. I'm this is locked down, man. Like, don't worry. But then in real life, when I'm with a German friend, like any one of my many German friends, I'm always like, "Do you want to run up there and order for both of us?" A Swede in Germany. I feel like you probably have a easier grasp just based on your mother tongue. Honey, do you really at this point have to ask if I'm German or American? Are you still wondering? Because I feel like it's pretty clear. Swede in Germany. Lived in NRW since 2018. I speak German with Swedish accent and no one can guess it. No one can guess it. Okay, well, that's actually kind of cool. Because the curse of, I say curse. I shouldn't say curse so much, because if you're an American who moved abroad, you're doing the right choice. But the, you know, common, or the most easily recognizable sound, I would say, in Europe, or at least in Germany, is the, that harsh American R. Liz, hello, I'm so grateful. My dad always spoke German to me. Some can't tell I'm from Florida originally. That's amazing. That's amazing. That's a thank you, Taylor. Number one gifter. That's so sweet. Thank you. That's the really cool thing about like seeing more and more like bilingual groups or families here. You know, it's such a beautiful thing, and I really wish that when I grew up in the States, I would have encountered that more. You know, in college, I studied Spanish a lot. Now, by now, it's all been replaced by German. But there was a time where I almost like got a minor in my university in Spanish. It was very important to me. Still to this day, probably what I would say is my closest confidant, like my closest friend, is from Madrid. And I really wanted to get very good at Spanish. I had a great teacher. But they should have been teaching us at least Spanish from first, second, third grade. I mean, my God, you know? I found Spanish because I had friends from Spain and from Latin America, and it was exciting to me to surprise them with phrases that they didn't expect to come out of me. And it was fun to speak. I mean, I was from the South. So also in Louisiana, you have like every Mexican restaurant has authentic cooks and waiters. And it was just like, I want to represent the South in the best way that I can, not just like cruise through it with blinders on, you know? And, I wish, you know, if it had stayed Spanish, great. Because I think if you're going to live in the States, it should be. But man, I wish they would have given us a second language from first or second grade, you know. The same way they do here with English. Taylor, your major was Spanish? How many things do you know? You are like the most multifaceted person. It's unbelievable. How many languages can you speak? Well, I'm not going to impress you very much. I have my mother tongue, and I've replaced a lot of what I know of Spanish with German. I'm like, yeah, B1 German, and I don't even want to put a number on how bad my Spanish has become. What did you say, Susan? Daughter did 1 year in U.S., moved here, went straight to grade 2, loves her superpowers in English class. That's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah, this is the thing, right? Like how they understand and grow with different languages here. It's just fascinating. Swede. My son speaks Swedish, German, and English. He's 3. Exactly. That's my point, right? There. Just before the pandemic, I had a full-time job to support my passions with, you know, music and stuff. I had a full-time job at an elementary school here in Munich, a Grundschule. I was like an assistant to, it was a private school that had, it was bilingual. It was a private school that had both languages, English and German. And I was mostly supporting the English speaking teachers because in the contract, if you're native English, you can only speak English to the students. And if you're native German, you can only speak German to the students. So I would support these teachers in English or math or art class. Sometimes I had the, you know, the gift or the opportunity to prepare like a little art lesson or like propose things I wanted the kids to do. And it was just like year 1 to year 4. And the reason I brought that up was, the 3 languages, was because I was constantly impressed with how many year 1 kids spoke 3 or 4 languages organically. That's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to me. I'm jealous, and I'm so in admiration of that. That's something that there was no chance of that where I grew up, you know? I would meet a kid whose, you know, mom is from, I don't know, let's just make things up, right? The mom would be from like Dubai, and the dad would be from, you know, like Istanbul. And they would speak English together in the house. Or maybe they had a sibling or an aunt who lived there who's from, you know, Barcelona. And then they would speak English in the house and Spanish and Turkish. And then they would come to the school and learn German. And it was just like, it's so, I was like, man, I was so impressed with these kids. It was so beautiful. It's like, it was like the, and they were, you know, and they weren't stressed about it. They weren't worried about, they weren't, you know, language was just not something on their list of concerns. It was so ingrained in them. It was like, you know, by that age, they can pee and poop and wipe their butts. And it was kind of the same level of like, oh, this kid, you know, speaks this language. This kid speaks that language. What's up? Yeah, sure. Okay. You'll never, yeah, exactly, Taylor. You'll never get that. I mean, especially now. You'll never get that sort of access in the States. And I'm very jealous of that because it doesn't require it never, especially here in Europe, like it never required a higher, you know, like financial class. It was just, well, this is what they learn in school. This is what they speak at home. You know, there, of course, I went to school with a lot of kids whose parents had migrated from Mexico and spoke Spanish at home. The fact that even that didn't force our schools to implement Spanish speaking with native speakers from year one, year two. Oh man. It's really disappointing. It's really disappointing. If I had known Spanish from the age of like, you know, or like been able to understand it at least, any second language from like 7 or 8 years old, learning German consciously when I needed to start learning it would have significantly been less, or would have significantly been less difficult, I think. Because you have a grasp on conjugation with French, with Italian, with Spanish, with German. There's a level of conjugation understanding that if you're coming at it cold, my God, man. Lord have mercy on your soul. You know, it's ridiculous. Megan Brewer, the global perspective was so different. Yeah. Hi, Prince. What's up, Cap? Trust me, it's not. Are you originally German? For those just joining, I am talking about how I wish I knew a second language from a much earlier age so that my learning of German would not have been so difficult. So, no. I know I look it. I look painfully German. Look, no one's denying that I look painfully German. SNY, I speak Arabic originally, but I've learned English and French for so many years, and German was hard. It is hard. I mean, there's no denying that German is a very difficult language. You know, you can speak 2-3 languages from birth. German's still tough to learn if it's not. I also think, like, if, you know, for some people, depending on like how your brain works, if German is even spoken to you from birth, and then you have to go to the classes and learn about all these exceptions and how some of the rules can just be broken constantly, it's tough to like see it on paper. Liz, if I had to start learning now, I'm not sure how well I'd be able to speak. Exactly. Exactly. SNY, it was easier when I moved to Germany? Really? Like, the curriculum was easier? What do you mean? Hey, Aspa. Learning Spanish helped me to learn German because I used the same methods. Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, you, if you really, like, lock in on a language that's not your native one, and you get that rhythm, you get that study pattern, you get that, the mechanics, right? Like, you get that understanding of how the machinery works different from the machinery of your, like, mother tongue. That second level of machinery will apply to a lot of those other, I mean, especially European languages. It's the same with Arabic. We speak a whole different language than we write and read. That's true, yeah. Ruka, I just need others to speak with. It's my problem. I can't retain enough studying by myself. That's like top to bottom the most important thing about learning a second language is the what's the word I'm thinking of? That's also the sin, like, or not the sin, the curse of learning a second language is forgetting the one you speak. But the, what do you call it? The immersion. Yeah, being immersed in that second language. Coming from me, who's not fluent, but the immersion is really, it is actually super essential. There are times when I'm in groups of people, it's not often, but there are times when I'm in a group where, you know, I you know, it's my choice for being where I am, but I'm, you know, maybe I'm the odd man out. And I need to lock in with the German. Sometimes that's a stressful time. It can be a lonely time. But those are the best times, like, for forceful learning. Maybe in the moment you don't have a great time. Like, you miss a lot of the chat and you maybe feel like you're not wanted. Depends on the group, depends on the situation, all that stuff. There is no, like, that's how it is. Everything fluctuates. Everything has exceptions. No, don't take what I'm saying, like, if you're just moving to Germany, like, that's how it is. It's not. It's just my experience. There are times when I am in groups where English is not going to fly completely. And it might be tough. It might not be as fun. But you leave those experiences being like, damn, I really pulled some phrases, you know, out of my butt. That I don't remember, like, I forgot about since my first intensive course of German, like, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. Like, you're challenged to, like, pull that stuff out of these books you read and these apps you played with, and, like, that part is cool. It's hard to see how great that is in the moment, but you will see it later. Like, immersion is just key. Immersion is just total key. That's what I was afraid of, so it forced me to learn quicker. Oh, God. Taylor, you're so impressive. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, you're on such a different level with German than I. It'll take me years to get anywhere close to that. But that's the beauty of it. Like, you were in a position. You had, like, your goal. And that you locked in, you know, and you did it. There is no, like, super easy way to do it. Liz says, one tip I'd give is to just be open to making mistakes. Converse. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, that might be the clearest and simplest advice to take from this whole life, you know. The scariest part is going into it knowing you will make mistakes. If you can go through that little screen of I'm gonna sound dumb, but you're with people, which a lot of Germans are really good people, if you get through that screen, bye Taylor, thanks for being here. It's nice to hear from you. If you get through that little screen of not being so concerned, and you understand the people that you're with are going to be okay with your mistakes and they might even help you. Oh my God. Go out there and just say whatever, because it's, immersion's total key. I think, guys, I might wrap up this. Have you ever traveled to Harts? No, I've never been there before. Harts. Let me see. Harts in Germany. Let's see here. No. Oh, what's this noise? Oh, thank you. Oh, wow. The noise was the gifts. Wow, thank you so much for the roses, Dabar. Wow. Wow, there's so many crazy sound effects coming out of my phone right now. Poppy, hey, bro, I saw you took on my idea about the neighbors inspecting your trash. What? Susan, I have a great friend that corrects me nicely. Thanks for the chat. I'm not alone. No, you're definitely not. You're definitely not. German neighbors. I don't know your... I have to check to see what your... you can put your video link in this chat because I don't necessarily remember yours, but I think we've all had that experience. Larry David did it first. Oh, that was when he was putting the trash in, like he was putting the trash in that like random person's bin, right? And then the neighbor came out and was like, don't put your trash in my bin. Well, I'm planning on going to grad school in Berlin in a few years. Woohoo! Sarah, yes. Have you been to Denmark? Not yet. Let's see here. So guys, I know you can't hear it on the live, but my voice is going out and I've been doing this, little recording here for like almost 90 minutes. So I'm going to wrap it up here, but for those who joined just now, sorry to wrap it up now, but thank you so much for being here and I hope you guys are doing well and, hope you have a great week and thanks so much for being here. All right, guys, I am getting very tired. My voice is going out. I really hope you guys had fun, and I know it's a little annoying when you can't see the screen, you can't see the chat in the real moment, but hopefully down the road we can make this a live video thing, and we can all play our part. God, I can hear this right now. This is a long episode. Thanks for being here. Subscribe, review, comment, go buy your tickets for the 2025 tour. Buy a hot sauce if you can't be there. I love you guys. Bye-bye. Thank you. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.